Radio Security to receive what you have from the United States, Dr. Stephen M. Greer. And Dr. Greer is widely regarded as the world's foremost authority on the subject of extraterrestrial intelligence. And he is the founder and international director of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, ESETI, a lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, the National Most Prestigious Medical Honor Society. Dr. Greer is an emergency physician and former chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Baldwin Memorial Hospital in North Carolina. Dr. Greer, as director of ESETI, has led research teams throughout the world investigating the existence of ETI, and on several occasions has successfully established preliminary contact and communication with extraterrestrials, spacecraft at close range. He has met with and provided briefings for senior members of the government, military and intelligence operations in the United States and around the world, including senior CIA officials, Joint Chiefs of Staff, White House staff, senior members of Congress and congressional committees, senior United Nations leaders, leadership and diplomats, senior military officials in the United Kingdom and Europe, and cabinet-level staff members of the Japanese government, among others. Dr. Greer has been seen and heard by millions worldwide on shows such as the Larry King Show on CNN, the BBC, CBS, NTV in Japan, sightings and concerts, TV programs in the United States, the Austin William Radio Show, and dozens of others, TV and radio programs. I am extremely proud to announce Stephen Greer.
Informing you about what happened at that historic meeting at the felt were them, and what the reaction has been since that time. As mentioned in my introduction, my work, we have been working for about 4 years now, providing briefings for the United States government officials and other government officials on this subject. We have been providing it as a civilian advisory group, which has been doing this so that our elected officials would know the truth about the subject. None of you should make any assumptions about what members of your government may or may not know or may or may not be doing on this subject. I will tell you a story now to give you an illustration of how important it is for you to be non-prejudicial regarding what your government may or may not know. For the most part, they know nothing, and they do nothing on this subject. The management of this subject has been compartmentalized for at least 50 years, and perhaps 60, into what are called USACs, Unacknowledged Special Access Projects. This is a term for ultra-secret, deep-black projects. And the way that works is that Browning is my general. General Browning is my commanding general, and I am a colonel. If I'm working on a USAC, Unacknowledged Special Access Project, and even though she is my commanding general, she's not in that project. If she asked me, Dr. Greer, what are you working on? Project X about, what do you know about it? My instructions are, under penalty of death, are to turn to her, even though she's my general, and say, sir or madam, no such project exists. This goes all the way up to the level of the Chief Executive Officer of the United States, the President, as well as others. I will not say what year I had this meeting, but in the recent past, I had the horrible responsibility of being the person to brief the Clinton administration and the CIA director on this subject. I was asked to do this because the Director of Central Intelligence, who of course in the United States is head of the CIA, the National Security Agency, and the National Reconnaissance Office, and all civilian intelligence gathering operations, had been receiving information from us about the subject and had been trying to look into who was doing what in these USAPs, these Unacknowledged Black Projects. He had been lied to. He had been told no such project existed. When he looked into certain files, they were missing. And I'm saying this in detail for really the first time. This is the Director of Central Intelligence of the United States. He was appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate, and he had no access to this project. I was asked to come to Washington, and we met at a townhouse in the Washington area, and I provided what I thought was going to be a 20-minute meeting because a cabinet-level person in the United States government, 20 minutes is a very long time. We were there for nearly 3 hours with the CIA director discussing this subject, and I will tell you today what I told him. The implications of what I have just said should sink in. Exactly what is going on when a subject of this magnitude is not routinely known about by the Director of Central Intelligence of the United States? I am not saying that none of the Directors of Central Intelligence have known about this. I know some who have. But it is spotty. And it depends on whether they want to pull you in the loop or not. And if you're not pulled in the loop, you're not going to be in the loop, and I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the President of the United States or the Secretary General of the United Nations. The management of this issue, I have told the Clinton White House and the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee and others at the United Nations and in governments around the world, is itself the greatest single threat to world peace implications of it are mind-boggling. I have advised Mr. Rockefeller for a number of years on this subject, and when we were first coming up with the idea for this best available evidence, I was invited out to his ranch out in the Tetons, where the president also has vacationed at his ranch, the J.Y. Ranch in the Tetons. And we were sitting out on the deck in front of the famous Remington bronze statue as a Native American with his hands outspread to the sky, and we were there under the stars with his beautiful and very famous sculpture. And he told Turnity, he said, you know, the way that this has been managed is the greatest threat to the United States national security since the United States was founded in 1776. And I said, yes, Lawrence, Mr. Rockefeller, I agree. I'm here to tell you that my people fought in the American Revolution without respect to any British people here. And we would, I think, be appalled to see to what extent democracy and government of the people, by the people, and for the people have been subverted on something of this import. The implications of this subject are so vast and so profound that no aspect of life on Earth will be untouched by the full disclosure of what I'm about to share with you today, and the full recognition of it by our scientific communities and by our government. In short, it is nothing less than the fact that we have not only detected life forms from other star systems and other planetary systems, but they are here. They are, in our assessment, totally non-hostile. However, they are very concerned about our capacity for hostility. Let's have some humility as humans for a moment. Let's say that you were from Alpha Centauri, pick a star system, any star system, and you have been monitoring these upright apes called humans. You know, some of us, I'm 6'4", weigh 210 pounds, very hairy, and so you think, oh my God, what an ape. And you think, well, it would be appalling to watch that in this century alone that we have exterminated 200 million of our own people in warfare, that we have developed weapons of mass destruction capable of completely obliterating all life on Earth, that we have developed 40,000 nuclear warheads aimed at each other in a stated policy until very recently of mutually assured destruction, MAD, in short, craziness. That we have, in the span of one person's lifetime, my great aunt, who's almost 100 years old, has seen the Earth's ecosystem go from something fairly normal to on the verge of collapse. Climatically, geophysically, the oceans, and the air. From one lifespan of our species. And a planet that is 5 billion years old. Now, if you are such a life form observing this chaos called modern human life, you would be excused if you would think that we were a little bit crazy and in need of monitoring and perhaps containment. I will get back to this later. We are a species in search of our future and a sustainable future. It actually has already been given to us, but it is covered in black projects, and it is in deep USAC projects, and as Ben Rich, the head of Lockheed Corporation Skunk Works, said to us before his death of cancer, it will take an act of God to get the truth of this out so that humanity can benefit from these extraordinary scientific breakthroughs. And he said this after he had informed us that Lockheed and others had been working on projects enabling us to travel through interstellar space, and I quote, the ability to travel through interstellar space already exists and is in human hands. This from nobody less than Ben Rich, who is head of Lockheed Skunk Works. These are the folks who built the U-2, the B-2 stealth bomber, etc. What the study is doing is on two fronts simultaneously. I founded the study 7 years ago last month, and in that time we have initiated two major projects. One is known as Project Starlight. It was initially a code name for an effort to put together the best scientific evidence on the subject, to brief world leaders on the subject, and to put into play event that would lead to a global disclosure of the scientific material related to the matter. I have described that already in some minor way. We'll go more into that in a moment. The second part of our project, which was actually the first, is how we started, was called the CE5 Initiative, the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind Initiative. And this is an interplanetary diplomatic effort. We have formed dozens of research teams to go throughout different areas of the world and attempt to establish bilateral contact and communication with these life forms when they are sighted. For example, in the video you saw many images of these objects in Mexico near the volcanic zone where they are doing reconnaissance and stabilization projects related to the instability of the Pacific Ring of Fire and the volcanic zone. That's basically why we're there right now. We have sent multiple times research teams to go to that area to attempt to communicate with them, and we have not been without success. We have had on more than one occasion huge spacecraft the size of 3 football fields circle up, large triangular craft that have come within a few hundred feet of us and have signaled back and forth with us. There has also been more extensive communication, but this has been through non-local telemetry modulated through what you would call consciousness, and we'll get into that in a moment. Now, I don't know if maybe I was clear on that, but we'll get back to that. The CE5 initiative is open to anyone who wants to try to do it. We are unfunded. I'm sure if I claim that I had been raised by a 14-foot tall extraterrestrial, it would be all the money we needed from the tabloids. But because we're doing something serious, there are no funds for us. And so I have basically injected $1 million of my own time and money into the effort and has gotten us where we are, as well as the support of a few benefactors. But the research teams are open to anyone. I should comment that there's some handouts up here on the table you can take at the end of my talk that describe a training program we're going to have in the high desert of California in November, where we'll take a team of people into an area where there have been a great many of these UFOs seen and train them how to initiate signaling and communication with the objects. So if you're interested in that, it's open to anyone who wants to come within reason. We do reserve the right to eliminate enough cases and crack positive. Beyond that, it's open to anyone. I'm sure you don't have any of those in Norway. We have all those in California. Enough to go around, not to worry. We've got your share and then some. So the CE5 initiative, which was named after the concept of a close encounter of the fifth kind, which is an encounter that has been precipitated or entered into voluntarily by humans. In other words, one of these objects may come floating by instead of just watching it passively. You might take a laser and signal to it. You might take a radio and transmit signals to it, or you may use some other technologies which we've developed to signal to it and have it come over. At the moment that it comes over and stops and signals to you, that is a close encounter of the fifth kind, and these have happened hundreds and hundreds of times. We literally have had these objects land in the field with us during these exhibitions. And some of the videotapes and things on this collection are from those events. By the way, the reason, although we've been ridiculed a great deal in some circles, the reason Army Intelligence and the CIA took us very seriously was after we were in 1992, had a near landing of 4 of these objects on a beach near Gulf Breeze, Florida, after we had vectored them in, like you vector a jet into your airport at Oslo, and we had vectored them in and signaling to them, and we had 5 videotapes of this, and the head of Army Intelligence came to me and said, just what the hell are you doing? And I said, well, what you guys have not allowed the people to do, we decided we will educate them and we'll do it anyway. So I don't mince words with these guys, you've got to speak their language. And moreover, I turned to him and I said, this is exactly what are you going to do about it? At any rate, we are very much encouraging people in Norway and Scandinavia to form research teams that can go out to areas, particularly to the north, where there have been many UFO sightings in the area around Iceland recently, a tremendous amount of activity. And I would suggest that you form research teams, perhaps with your explorer, Monica, who is here, to go to these areas and attempt to establish interplanetary diplomacy. And that's how we regard this. It is a diplomatic effort as well as a scientific research effort to establish communication with these life forms. I will talk more about this later in my presentation. I would like to first go into more detail about what we have found as a global research team looking into this subject. And the comprehensive assessment of the situation, which I wrote in 1991, I believe it was, is little changed after 6 or 7 intervening years. And that is that these extraterrestrial spacecraft are from multiple planetary systems. There are more than one phenotype or body type of life form involved. That they are capable of interstellar travel at multiples of the speed of light. We'll talk about that in a moment. And they are capable of communication through interstellar distances instantly by something which I have called consciousness-assisted technology, and technology is what is consciousness. And I will lose some of you here, perhaps, who are more dinosaur scientific types, but too bad, you're dinosaurs, and you will be buried soon by the fact that the quantum reality is this, that consciousness or mind, awakeness, conscious intelligence, is an omnipresent field, that it is the fundamental unified field. It is something which can be technologically interfaced with through electronic means and sub-electronic scalar technologies. And in doing so, can enable you to modulate communication systems through interstellar distances instantly. In other words, instead of traveling on a microwave beam or a beam of radio signal at the speed of light, which would take 1,000 years to go 1,000 light years, the communication is instant and it is modulated through advanced computer technologies that interface directly with what you and I would call thought. Now, this is a very fundamental understanding of how these life forms are communicating and also understanding of how far we have to go in our scientific paradigm to begin to comprehend the extraordinary nature of this fabulous universe that we live in. In a similar way, the propulsion system enables them to drop out of the linear time-space continuum. Precisely how this happens is that there's a field called the zero-point field and technologies that enable us to, through counter-rotating electromagnetic currents, to tap into the zero-point field and then to accelerate in a way that is non-linear. By non-linear meaning, it doesn't go in a line like this on a railroad track or a jet. And the ability to do this is dependent on the capacity to create a phase shift for the entire spacecraft and everyone in it. So it goes out of phase from our, what we would call, three-dimensional reality and goes into a phase that dips into a sub-electromagnetic field that's heretofore been beyond our ability to detect, and enables them to travel through interstellar distances. If not instantly, there is a coefficient of drag related to this. I won't get into a lot of more in detail. I know this isn't a group of physicists, but essentially it enables them to travel, say if it was 1,000 light years, that it had taken 1,000 years of the speed of light, or thousands of years, less than the speed of light, it takes maybe a week or a month or what have you. But it's very fast. the best is going to be to step on the Concord. Memo to Judge Jet Propulsion Laboratories. I have friends that work there, and to Goddard Space Flight Center, and to the Norwegian Space Agency, if you have such a thing. These life forms are not traveling through interstellar space using Exxon Jet A fuel. They are not using oil from the North Sea, and they are not using internal combustion engines. Now, to tell you how this sounds ridiculous, everyone always giggles when I say that, but scientists and many policymakers, when they see a phenomenon like this, will dismiss it because they'll say, well, it has to be a hallucination because nothing goes that fast, does it? As if humans are at the apex of all evolution in the universe that is 20,000 million years old. Moreover, the attitude is very much that if we haven't discovered it, it can't exist. Because you see, every generation of scientists thinks that they know everything. And so the next generation comes along and proves them quite dead wrong. But the fact of the matter is that the hubris and arrogance of humans is such that there is a tendency for us to regard anything which we don't understand as not being able to exist. In this case, we are dealing with life forms which have evolved perhaps a few thousand to a few million years ahead of us. In order to travel through interstellar space, they have developed technologies which are nonlinear, that use a type of quantum holography, if you will, to borrow from my good friend Ed Mitchell, the astronaut, his concept of quantum holography and quantum physics. And they are using this in a very reproducible way. So that it is not a random thing to communicate through interstellar space or travel through interstellar space. Now, these scientific systems, I won't go into a great deal of detail on it because I probably shouldn't say more than I said, but suffice it to say they've been studied for about 50 years in the United States and Great Britain and other countries, and they have been figured out. We have very well established how this is happening. And the question is now, at this point in our history, what are we going to do about it? How long should they reside in black projects undemocratically controlled by an elite number of people who think that they know best when the Earth is dying, choking to death by the internal combustion engine and the use of oil and coal and natural gas? Now, I'm hitting on this subject here that if you have an IQ greater than that of Mudd, which all of you do, because Norwegians are brilliant people, you will realize that this is a big deal. We're talking a multi-hundred-trillion-dollar question. Number one, what happens when you introduce a phenomenon and confirm its reality, which...
Here we had to change the tape, so a little of the information in this part of the lecture is missing.
And I said it down when I was 82. The tank, the super secret eavesdrop proof, electronic proof tank that they go into to get briefed on secret projects, is the wrong tank. The way that this thing is managed is a total parallel process to normal government, even extraordinary government programs. It is the most secret project in the history of mankind. There is nothing that parallels it. After I had met with the CIA director, I thought, well, either this man is a liar. Turned out he was not. He was honorable. The meeting was set up by a mutual friend of ours. Or this is the most dysfunctional and dangerous situation that I've ever come across. That something this important, these technologies, could be utilized and co-opted and hidden even from these kinds of officials. Since that time, I have met with very senior United Nations officials, members of Congress, heads of state, royalty, scientific leaders, and senior members of the Joint when she uses that. Now imagine my horror in April of this year when I was escorted into the Pentagon and I was there with astronaut Ed Mitchell, who was one of the men who walked on the moon, Apollo 14, and my military advisor and national security assistant, and a witness, a top secret government witness from the Eisenhower years, who literally had seen the extraterrestrial material and hardware from one of these extraterrestrial devices, which is in the tree. And I went into this meeting thinking that surely the man I'm meeting with, who is an admiral, must know about this. He did not. And let me tell you, I am not at liberty to get in this position, but if I were to tell you, you would fall out of your chairs, because it was not the man in charge of procuring widgets and toilet paper for the Air Force. It was someone who was head of an area of the Joint Chiefs that damn well should have known about this. And he was not lying either. He was telling the truth when he turned to us and he said, I have never been briefed on this subject. And it scared him to death. And it should scare you. I am not here to scare you, but I am here to warn you that we as people and as people who work in diverse fields must come together to see that the subject is properly disclosed and is returned to democratic oversight and control by national and international bodies of elected and appointed officials. It is critical that this happen and that it happen quickly. And in a moment, you will understand why this is critical. In the course of this investigation and sort of my globe trotting around the world meeting with scientists and government people, and you know, the whole thing has been like a nightmare in a way. Some people say, oh, how interesting. I've been in underground bases and facilities where no one was supposed to ever have gone. And I have seen things that no one was ever supposed to see. And what I can tell you is that these technologies are very real, and they are fully operational, and they are in the hands of people who, I think, behave in a sociopathic and perhaps psychopathic fashion. Hitler's worst scientist, in many respects, I think, could not have been more irresponsible than what I have learned is going on with this subject. For example, Steve Seti, in the course of putting together his pool of evidence witness, which we have given to head of state, has set upon the course of identifying what Woodard and Bernstein and the Washington Post call deep throats, people who are deep cover whistleblowers in top secret positions in the military industrial complex, including intelligence agencies, military, and aerospace areas, private aerospace firms, who know about this subject and who are bound, allegedly, by the national security oath to stay quiet, but who want the truth to come out. About a year ago, we had a couple of dozen of these identified. I now have over 150. Now, Woodard and Bernstein had one or two deep throats that blew the lid off Watergate. We have identified over 150 of these types of witnesses who know about the inner workings of these programs, who have worked on reverse engineering the extraterrestrial technologies, who have personally handled extraterrestrial devices, and who have overseen the deployment of ARVs, the alien reproduction vehicles, which are the result of the reverse engineering projects. We have in our team people who have invented some of the applications for these technologies that are now being used in warfare for the purpose of tracking, and on a few cases, destroying extraterrestrial vehicles as they approach the Earth. We have confirmed this with more than one very good military source. And if there's a 1 in 10 chance that what I've just said to you is true, this is the greatest threat to the security of our planet which has ever been allowed to occur. Because what I'm talking about here are folks who have taken, ironically, extraterrestrial materials which have been both retrieved through hostile acts on the part of military forces as well as accidents, have taken these extraterrestrial devices, figured out how they work, and turned them into weapon systems that are now attempting to destroy the extraterrestrial devices. This is a very serious problem. And I say that this is going on without a scintilla of proof that these platforms are hostile, except that they are very concerned about our hostility, and as such, have clipped our wings a bit in our attempts to put military assets into space. Can you blame them? What I mean by that, to elaborate further, is that these life forms who are watching very closely how we are developing technologically and spiritually are horrified at the idea that we should begin to project our level of consciousness and our violent tendencies into their corner of the universe. And as such, they have a containment policy, in my opinion, in place, where they have not allowed us to do everything we might like to do. Now, Ben Rich of Lockheed Skunkworks said that we have the ability to travel through interstellar space. I don't believe we've been allowed to do so, however, because I don't believe we're considered good cosmic citizens yet. And can you blame them? I mean, here we are, a bunch of warring monkeys who have, you know, killed hundreds of millions of our own. And we would arrogate to ourselves the right to project ourselves into vast distances from the Earth. I think not. And I would agree with that assessment. However, if you are someone planning space excursions and utilizing these technologies, you might get very irritated if one of your projects got curtailed by an extraterrestrial intervention. And this has happened. It has led to an escalating level of tensions which have not been discussed publicly and which have not been discussed even privately at very senior levels, and which need to be. Because if we fumble this football, this might be one of the biggest fumbles in the history of mankind and could lead to a catastrophe of unprecedented proportion. It is urgently important that this subject begin to be treated seriously and that policymakers begin to discuss how we can interface with these other life forms other than down the barrel of a laser. I was reading on the jet coming over here from America yesterday an interesting thing that I had heard about years ago, and that's a laser called Miracle, M-I-R-C-L-E, which is a hugely powerful land-based laser capable of blowing spacecraft out of the sky, and they are about, I think, next week or sometime quite soon, they're going to test it out of White Sands missile range to destroy a satellite which they no longer feel they need, but which is fully operational, out of the sky, and to see what effect it has. Well, if that's already being announced in the New York Times and on CNN, I have news for you. The covert project using these technologies are light years ahead of that. Whatever you hear about in the public news is usually 2 or 3 or 4 generations behind what's actually going on in covert projects. And you can just take that to the bank as a standard. These technologies, it is a bit likened to a knife. You can cut bread and serve people and eat each other with it, or you can cut someone's throat. I suggest we stop trying to cut throats with these weapons and begin to use them for the good of mankind and for only peaceful purposes in the exploration of space and in the deployment of technology. This is essential that we do this. Interestingly, the witnesses whom we have identified come from every branch of military service and from all over the world. These include people who are cosmonauts and generals in the Soviet Union, military officers in the United Kingdom, Air Force, Army, Navy, Marine officers in the United States, as well as numerous people in the private aerospace sector. Now, this is, without a question, the biggest story in history. And the question is, how will it be told? And who will tell this story? When we first started this project, we had hoped that by briefing key people in the White House and at the United Nations, that they would take up the subject and do the right and courageous thing by it. I don't know if that's possible now. What we have concluded is that we need to take this to the people very quickly, and in addition to the people's representatives. As such, in America, we convened a briefing which I have alluded to earlier, and it occurred on April 9, 1997, just a few months ago in Washington. It was arguably one of the most significant, if not the most significant, civilian UFO event in history, at which there were 30 congressional offices and members of Congress present, including chairmen of powerful and relevant committees in the United States Congress. There were representatives from the White House staff, the National Academy of Sciences, the Dutch Embassy, and other foreign governments. At this briefing, we presented extraordinary amounts of evidence, including over 250 pages of top secret government documents, which are smoking guns without a question regarding the subject. In addition, they heard from over a dozen military witnesses, ranging from the people in the early 50s who were encountering these UFOs on their jet flights and their airplane flights across the Atlantic, to people who as recently as a decade ago were working in top secret facilities dealing with the matter. Let me summarize for you, and I wish I had more time to do this, but I simply don't. I don't know what time line should be over at 1. I don't have time to go into a great deal of detail, but let me give you one example. One witness who was there, a man now only in his 30s, late 30s, had worked under Admiral Train, I will spell it for you, T-R-A-N-E, in the Atlantic Space Command and Atlantic Command in Norfolk. In October of 1981, he was working in the command center when a zero alert, not a drill, occurred. There was an incoming unknown off the eastern seaboard of the United States of America that entered at tremendous speed and then hovered. It was confirmed by the Admiral through secure sources back to the Kremlin and also through the network which they had, that this was neither a U.S. nor a Soviet object, nor was it an object of any known country. This was in broad daylight. The object was about 300 feet in diameter and shaped like a disc, and it was metallic, and it was being painted quite well on radar. The people who tell you that we do not have good radar cases of this are liars and don't believe them. What occurred was that this object came in off the coast of Newfoundland, and with one sweep of the radar scope, appeared off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida. This you don't know. This was not, I don't know how many afterburners you got on your jet. This ain't no jet. And with one more sweep of the radar scope, was off the coast of Norfolk at the Atlantic Command Space Command headquarters. They scrambled jets off of sea-based carriers as well as land-based assets to pursue this, and most importantly, listen carefully, at gave the order to down or destroy the object. This is an interplanetary incident, and we have first-hand witnesses for this. Subsequently, these jets were scrambled. They were not, of course, able to maneuver in this fashion. They could not move in a couple of seconds from the coast of Newfoundland off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida. However, at one point, up off of the northeastern coast of the United States, one of the jets got close enough that they got the camera footage photographed. Of it, very, very good. This photograph was later brought to the command center, underground center, and was put up on the screen, huge screen, much bigger than this, and was shown to be a large metallic disc with the sun reflecting off of it and measuring about 300 feet or about 100 meters in diameter. This is quite large, but size of a football field. Interestingly, even though we were not able to down it, there was intelligence coming in also from our KH-12 satellite. These are the National Reconnaissance Office super secret satellite that a few years ago, nobody seems to know what they were called. But the KH-12 satellite, and it's an object after coming in off the coast of the United States and being unable to have any reception of it and attempting to be destroyed, moved up off the coast of the Canary Islands, tilted 66 degrees and went off into space at a 66 degree angle out into space and was vanished off of the Deep Space Network. There was coordination from the DSN, Deep Space Network at Cheyenne Mountain, as well as other facilities, but these are very top secret ways that these things are managed. My friend said it was 16 years ago this month, October 1981. Our capacity to track and to target and to destroy these objects has gone up exponentially. And to the extent that there is still this kind of cat and mouse game going on, to that extent, the world is at risk for a worst case scenario. And I would encourage you to consider seriously what we as people should be doing to try to make the best of this situation and to get a stand down order issued from all national governments regarding the use of any violent engagement of these objects. Let me recount what another witness told us. By the way, all these witnesses are military top secret witnesses. The case I just shared with you was from a top secret FBI special compartmentalized information officer. He had signed a statement drafted by us saying that he would testify under oath before Congress under penalty of perjury and imprisonment to what I have just shared with you. We know his name, rank, and serial number, and I've got his home address and phone number. And this man is so concerned about how the subject is being dealt with that he wants the truth to come out. We are asking the United States Congress, and I would suggest you should ask your parliament or whatever you have here, that they should hold open, not closed, open hearings on this subject immediately so that this information can come out. If we will do it, if any country in the world will do it, we can pack the hearing room with dozens and dozens of top secret witnesses who have dealt with these subjects who under oath will testify to what they know. There's no reason. We have sacrificed life and limb and virtually all of my wealth to go and get this information. There's no reason why it can't come out. It must come out. Now listen to what another witness told us. This man, back in 1978, was at a facility known as McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey. He's a pilot, Air Force officer, and at the time was head of the 21st 21st Air Force Intelligence Division. So he was head of intelligence for that area and the Air Force. He was a major, and his name is Major George Filer. He is very concerned about this subject and has taken an active role recently in looking into it. He shared with us something very interesting, because in 1978, he came into work one morning to find the control center in chaos. And he said, well, what just happened? And he said he was told, seriously, that an alien was shot and killed on the tarmac at Fort Dix, which is right next to McGuire Air Force Base. They're contiguous facilities, right adjacent to each other. And he thought, well, an alien might come from Mexico or Guatemala or Poland or something. And they said, no, sir, an alien as in planet space, an extraterrestrial. And what had happened is that on the previous night, there had been UFOs that were seen in an area of Fort Dix and also McGuire, where nuclear weapons were being transshipped to Europe, of course, during the height of the Cold War. And that is, the McGuire Air Force Base was one of the key places where weapons were shipped across the Atlantic out of that facility, where that meant now, I guess at that time, it was not even talked about. And apparently, for some reason, UFOs were in the area doing reconnaissance or investigating or doing something. In the course of this, one of the extraterrestrials, sort of a short life form, 4 or 5 feet tall, with a one-piece uniform, had gotten out of the spacecraft and, unfortunately, was surprised by armed guards who were equally surprised, I'm sure, as he was. I mean, I don't know who was more shocked. And they opened fire and killed him on the spot. And he was left there. He was left on the tarmac when this witness that we have came in. He was still on the tarmac, although he did not go out and see the dead body. He had been asked to brief the general, who was commander of the base, on this subject, and so he started asking questions, and how did this happen, and yada, yada, yada. Well, before he had the opportunity to actually brief the general, which he did not want to do, because you can imagine how hard it is to go up to a commanding general and say, gee, we shot an extraterrestrial on your base last night. He was asked to stand down and was taken off the case, at which time the so-called Blue Berets from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base flew in with the C-141 transport, which allegedly are not based at Wright-Patterson. And they came in and they took the body and flew it back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, this is the testimony he has provided. We have corroborating, independent, separate witnesses who were there when this happened, who actually did see the body and have confirmed that it was an extraterrestrial biological entity, a EBE. Now, these are not lights in the sky cases. These are not unambiguous. These are not people who have anything to gain from sharing this kind of information. And they are willing to testify under oath to the truth of these events. We have now, as I mentioned, identified over 150 such witnesses, and it makes an unambiguous and extraordinary case for the reality of this subject. If I had a choice of an actual extraterrestrial device to have at a news conference, or a dozen of these heroes of our country who have handled this stuff directly, I will take the heroes of our country. Why? Because everyone would say that Steven Spielberg made the prop. If it was a disc sitting up on the stage or a dead body. But if you've got people who walked on the moon, and you've got people who have fought in our armed services for generations, and you have people who are generals and colonels and majors and lieutenant colonels, who are risking their lives and their pensions to talk about what they know, I don't believe the world would doubt this for a moment. It is very powerful. It is the linchpin of the Project Starlight disclosure process. And we are looking for a stage to launch this disclosure from, and maybe someone in this audience can help us build that stage. We don't know yet if it will be the United States Congress, or the United Nations, or here in Oslo. It may be in Oslo. Let me tell you what has happened in the wake of in the aftermath of these historic briefings in Washington in April. During this same trip, as I mentioned, we went to the Pentagon to meet with very senior members of the Joint Staff, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In addition, I met with a number of other Washington officials privately. And the concern over this subject is very high. And in the aftermath of what we have done, it has gone into a free fall situation. So much so that the time I think is right for us to do something constructive if ever it has been right in 50 years. To give you an example of how seriously this is taken, let me tell you what happened to one of our witnesses. I will share with you what happened to him, and then I will share with you what he knew and what he was prevented from testifying about. This man heard me on a radio show in America and called me, and he said, "I think I can help you." He was a man who worked as a contract agent in intelligence for the Air Force and for other agencies in the United States government, and was quite high up in terms of covert access that he had, projects that he had worked on. He told me that he really didn't know anything about the extraterrestrial subject. I said, "Well, then why are you calling me? I'm the director for the study of extraterrestrial intelligence." He said, "Well, I work on the other end of it." I said, "What other end of it?" I said, "The end of it that has to do with the alien reproduction vehicles. The human piloted craft. We have since found out the companies that make them. I even know the company that makes the anti-gravity drive system for them. I know people on their board." He said that he had learned and was part of meeting, dealing with a plan to launch an extraterrestrial attack on this planet that would be human, but would look extraterrestrial. How many people have heard of the movie Independence Day? Yeah, okay, a lot of you. It would be a scenario not too different from that, but it would be totally potent. Now let me tell you, this is doable. This is not science fiction. It can be done. The technology exists to unleash what would look like an attack of extraterrestrial nature on our planet, but would 100% be covert alien reproduction vehicles made and manufactured by humans, masquerading as ET craft. This would be the counterintelligence stroke of the millennium, and it can be done. This man sat in on meetings where there were joint Air Force intelligence, CIA, and National Security Agency officials discussing this kind of counterintelligence operation. Interestingly, it would be likened to a cosmic Gulf of Tonkin. People remember the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Well, it was an incident where basically we provoked and really hoped an attack in the Gulf of Tonkin and exaggerated it so that the people who wanted to stand the Vietnam War and money for the war would be able to achieve their ends by causing a sort of a sense of an alarm and what have you. And so the whole thing was an intelligence operation that successfully extracted a lot more money out of the political process and allowed us to expand the Vietnam War to its disastrous conclusion, of course. But in a similar vein, it appears that there are those who would like to initiate a cosmic Gulf of Tonkin. And I am here to tell you that this should be exposed and under no uncertain terms. It cannot be allowed to happen. To that end, I have written an advisory for the National Security Council and for the White House, as well as the Joint Chiefs of staff warning of his capacity to do this, and moreover, warning of what I think is the psychopathic and criminal intent of some of these people to try to launch it. Now, in your mind, you've got to be asking, who the hell are these people who would try to do such a thing, and what is the agenda? Look, the biggest industry on this planet, aside from energy and oil and drugs. By the way, the drug trade now surpasses the oil trade in dollars revenue. That's all I'll say about that. Put one and two, one and one together, and you might stop the two or something. But at any rate, the business of war and the business of large military industrial projects is something which is very difficult to rationalize, particularly when you're speaking in the United States alone of upwards of $300 billion U.S. dollars a year going into it, not to mention expenditures in other countries, where you're now talking around $500 billion a year going into military intelligence operations. It's hard to justify that under some enemy. I mean, God heaven forbid that he should break out on this planet. I mean, you know, I mean, but if you're looking from the perspective of this very lucrative thing, which Eisenhower warned us about, called the military-industrial complex, there would be a need, would there not, to do pretty much like Ronald Reagan said, that if we had a common threat from outer space to unite against, that it would enable us to unite the world, but not coincidentally, would also rationalize trillion-dollar expenditures on space-based weapon systems into and throughout the next century. Now, guess who would benefit from that? The military-industrial complex. It doesn't take an Einstein to figure out what's happening here. And I think that the problem is that very few people have been courageous enough and call it state to say, I'm here to tell you that that is exactly the kind of agenda that is operating, not through the conventional military, but through these ultra-secret black projects. There is a big attempt to demonize the extraterrestrial presence through popular culture, such as fabricated abduction events, which are actually military events, fabricated scenarios and belief systems, because if we can scare the bejesus out of people, is that a Norwegian word? I don't think it is. If we can scare people enough, perhaps we can eventually, when the subject inevitably gets disclosed, be able to convince the body politic to cough up the hundreds of trillions of dollars that it will take over the next century to build a space-based envelope, defense envelope around our planet, and to engage in a military response. This is exactly what is going on. It is a serious threat to world peace, and it is a serious threat to the future of humanity. I have spoken to people who also know this witness, who has confirmed that indeed there have been projects to utilize reverse-engineered extraterrestrial devices and other high-tech devices to, if needed, stimulate hostile and false extraterrestrial events. Do not be deceived if this happens. Look behind the puzzle. Try to see behind the curtain, because you'll see the Wizard of Oz pulling all these levers if you peek behind the curtain. And I've had both the pleasure and, I think, the horror of being in a situation where I have been able to peek behind the curtain more than I think I would have wanted to 5 years ago, but I have, so I have to live with that every day of my life. The responsibility of knowing what to do about this, though, is huge, and I'm very keen that people here in Norway join in our coalition to have the subject revealed in a way that is peaceful and in a way that turns the whole management of this issue back to the democratic processes of our planet, and that this happens very, very soon. We are running out of time. each month that goes by, we increase our capacity to track and target and destroy these extraterrestrial devices. Each month that goes by, we have a deeper and more entrenched covert military-industrial sector dealing with these technologies to find new and more alarming ways to apply them. And I would say, if I sound a bit too philosophical here, you'll forgive me, but at some point you do some very real soul-searching, that I think the time has come for us to beat these swords into plowshares. I think the time has come for us to say no to this addiction which the world economy and the power structure have to militarism and to the application of every wondrous technology to the most destructive and murderous weapon. I think the time has come for us as a people to regain our place as the true people who run the government and who determine policy, and to take our place in the cosmic neighborhood peacefully into the next century. And I believe the time has come for us to transform the current situation, which will lead inevitably to catastrophe, to one where the people of the world can have the opportunity to live in peace and to have a truly sustainable civilization which does not cannibalize our planet. This can be done. It is daunting, but it can be done. And it will be done, one way or the other. Now, the other, I don't even want to think about. But the one way that we can do it is for humans to come together and to decide that we are going to enter into collective security, that the borders of our nations will be secure, that a minimum of armaments will be in place, and that there will be no more allowance for these excursions into space and for the militarization of space. This is very important because the U.S. Air Force recently has come out with a plan to evolve into a space force, and that's what they are calling it. And this is not covert, this is public, this has been on CNN and in the New York Times. We do not need that. As an American, I am ashamed that we are taking the lead into the militarization of space. It needs to stop. And I think that if we do not stop this, it will be stopped for us. I believe these extraterrestrial life forms have shown remarkable restraint, given the business provocations and machinations of the last 50 years. But how much more will we test their patience? How much further dare we go into the use, the military use of these technologies and these weapons of mass destruction that make hydrogen bombs look like Tinker Toys? This is a serious problem which absolutely has to be corrected and cannot be corrected until a very bright light is shown into the corner of those covert programs. That's what we are attempting to do. We have an unenviable situation, however, of a paucity of courage amongst our leaders. In my naivete, in the early days of this project, I thought that if we provided definitive evidence and unassailable top-secret testimony to the right people in government, that they would do the right thing. They have not. I am about to conclude further meetings in Washington with the chairman of very powerful committees, very relevant committees, and with other officials in the Pentagon and the CIA to see if they will join with us in this attempt to get the truth out and to look back into the genie back in the bottle as far as the military use of these technologies. I don't know if we'll be successful. And it may be that the people themselves will have to take this issue up. I cannot do it as a single person. No one can. We need your help, and we need it urgently. And in this sense, I'm appealing to the people of Norway. who I regard as some of the most enlightened, best educated, peaceful, and progressive people on the planet. You are very humble people, but I can tell you that as I go around the world, the Scandinavian countries are tremendously respected for their efforts at working for peace, for their efforts for working for a peaceful world and a better environment, and that you are viewed and held in very, very high esteem throughout the United Nations and throughout many circles around the world. And I think that given that Helsinki and Oslo and other countries, cities in Scandinavia have been identified with very important peace initiatives, disarmament initiatives and accords, including the recent ban on landmines, which I believe was negotiated here in Oslo just a couple of weeks ago, that it would be very appropriate for people in Oslo to take up this issue in a serious fashion. That the people who are associated with the Nobel Institute and the people who are associated with other peace groups in this country should begin to work with us in an attempt to get to the bottom of this and to see what can be done to prevent this in a preventive way, avert any further militarization of space and any more violent use of these new technologies. This cannot be done, however, until the subject itself gets disclosed, because for most people, most policymakers, even if they think the subject may be true, they really don't know. Member of Congress after member of Congress, UN leadership, you name it, have told me, I have no doubt that the subject is real, but I have no access to the project, I have no access to the data, I have no access to the scientific program going on, and so how can I disclose what I have no access to? The CIA director himself told me that he had gone looking for documents about projects that we had witnesses that existed, and we had documents for them that existed that had been secreted out. And when he went to go look there, guess what? It was gone. When Representative Stephen Schiff of the United States Congress tried to look into Roswell, guess what? The entire file for exactly the years of the Roswell incident were missing. And this from the only nuclear bomb squadron in the world at the time. They're not that careless with documents in the United States government. So the problem becomes is that we have got to, as civilians, have got to collect the best scientific evidence. Unassailable witnesses from inside the covert project and educate our leaders, and then they must do the right thing and begin to exercise the prerogative of the power of constitutional and legal rule of law in our governmental circles. I believe that Oslo and the people of Norway and Scandinavia could be very instrumental in facilitating these types of processes at this type of breakthrough. And if there is anyone here who can help us, I hope that you will talk to me and give me your name. I will give you my card. If you know somebody in scientific or political or military arena or in nonprofit institutions in your country who you think would be open to discussing this and exploring it with us, please contact me. Everything we have achieved has been through networking. It has all been by people talking to other people who are concerned deeply about this subject. Now, I would give you a false impression if I were to tell you that this the secrecy surrounding this subject is only American. It is not. We know that even in Scandinavia, there have been major UFO events that have been kept quiet. We know in England that they have worked extensively in cooperation with the Americans on the elaboration and discovery of the technology. No less a figure than Lord Hill Norton, who is the five-star admiral, a sea lord, has told me personally that all the years he was head of the Ministry of Defense and MI5 and MI6, as well as the military committee for NATO, that he never was briefed on this subject. Now, he learned of it from Lord Mountbatten. Because Lord Mountbatten had one of these things land on his estate in England and melted the stone.
Here we had to change the tape, so a little of the information in this part of the lecture is missing.
International Corporation of San Diego. It is located in the work for other private contracting industry. Because I will remind you that the U.S. government does not build anything, thank God. But they contract with Lockheed to build things, and they contract with Northrop. And the whole management of this thing is so labyrinthine and so incredibly inscrutable to oversight that it boggles the mind. A member of the Senate Appropriations Committee of the United States of America, which writes all the checks for the United States, the chief counsel for that committee sat with me in the Senate Appropriations Room and said the following. He knew the subject was real. He knew that there were ultra-secret black projects going forward dealing with this, but he could not penetrate them, and he could not account for the money. That somewhere between $40 billion a year and $100 billion a year were going into black projects over which they had no oversight and who had no knowledge. A senator on the Intelligence Committee of the United States Senate told me personally that he had discovered by accident that the National Reconnaissance Office, an entity which most people have never heard of, that had a multi-billion-dollar budget, was building a $300 million office building in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., under the cover of it being an office for Rockwell International Corporation. But the National Reconnaissance Office was paying for it and building it, and it had never been approved by the United States Congress, and no one knew about it. It came out almost by accident. He then found a $4 billion slush fund, $4 billion slush fund in the National Reconnaissance Office, about which no one in the government knew. No one in the White House, no one in the Senate, no one in the House. Now, this is out of control. We have got to get a rein of, you know, get a grip on this. And, of course, in America, you know, the military people say a billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. But, nevertheless, it is a serious threat to national to world security when these kinds of funds and these sort of high-tech projects have no oversight by us, the people, and our representatives. And it's a serious thing that must be corrected. It will be corrected one way or the other. Since April, we have continued to have discussions with members of Congress, and I will be asking them soon in a sit-down meeting around a Congress table. Are you going to do this or not? Give us an open hearing where the truth about this can come out. And if they say no, then it's your responsibility and my responsibility to do it. How will it be done? The only way it can be done then is through a global, multimedia, private disclosure effort. It will cost millions of dollars. We don't have the money. It will require global video, documentary, books, and conferences to have the subject come out. We do not have the capacity to do it. We have the evidence, we have the witnesses, we don't have the ability to do it. If anyone here has an idea of how to put it together, fine. We have a Maserati that's been built, but it has no gasoline in the tank, and it's a very serious problem. The other problem is that where and how should this be done? It has to be done so that there is adequate control over the release of this information. I have had major television producers come to me and say, wink, wink, tell me everything you know, and give me all your witnesses and all your evidence and all your hardware and all your extraterrestrial artifacts. You got them. And we'll do the story. Right. And I've got a bridge to sell called the Brooklyn Bridge for $3.95. We'll let you have it. You can't let this be. We have got to do it in a way where there is some kind of final cut and final say-so over how this thing gets spun and how this thing gets presented is critically important. I cannot put at risk the lives of these witnesses and my own life for a group of people who we do not know or trust to have total control over what is done with it, because they can bury it, they can ridicule it, it may never see the light of day. In the United Kingdom, a major, very major documentary outfit connected to a very major, and that's all I'll say, global media outlet wants to do this story, but they will not allow us to have any say-so over what happens with it. Moreover, in the United Kingdom, they have no freedom of the press. There's something called a D-notice, D as in dog. And it stands for a defense notice, where they can issue that the Ministry of Defense or someone from deep inside MI5 can appear and D-notice something and it will be taken off the air. And there is no appeal for that. So, you know, finding a way to do this is a sticky wicket if we can't do it through a United Nations hearing or through a congressional hearing. But if the governments of the world continue to turn a blind eye to this and to respond with apathy and disregard, then we, the people, are going to have to bring it out. We, the people, have the ability to do it in terms of this evidence. We don't have the means to do it or this proper platform. Perhaps someone in Norway will help us. It is at the point where we are getting increasingly desperate for this. Within a one-month period, both myself and my right-hand assistant, who's worked with me for 6 years, was diagnosed with metastatic cancer. We don't know how much longer we'll even be alive. And so the need to move quickly is keen on all of our minds. I have multiple witnesses who are deep cover people who also are very sick. Some of them are elderly, but some of them are not elderly, but they are very, very sick. And they want to tell the truth about this before they run out of time as well. How we will do it, I don't know yet. We have plans, we don't have means. Perhaps something can be done. What I would like to also encourage you in Scandinavia to do is to perhaps consider helping to sponsor a world scientific summit on this subject. I would propose that there be a summit of scientists from around the world, as well as covert witnesses and other research specialists, to present at a very prestigious location with other scientists from around the world invited, all the evidence related to this which we have discovered. It is a substantial amount of evidence. I couldn't do it in two days, much less 2 hours, but it is there. And we need to have a prestigious conference where this can be presented to the world and to the scientific world as soon as possible. The means, the evidence exists, but again, we need sponsorship. Perhaps there would be an institute in Oslo or some other country that would be willing to help us put on such an event. And lastly, I would like to make an announcement today. I didn't tell the organizers I was going to do this. This is a secret. And that is, today, on October 4th in Oslo, I'm announcing the formation of a new coalition to work for the establishment of universal peace. It is called the Coalition for Universal Peace, CUP, CUP. And I hope our cup runs over with peace, and soon, because no prosperity can exist without peace. There can be no advancement in human civilization without peace. And I do not believe that we, on the brink of winding down the Cold War and increasing peace in the world, need to replace the tensions of the Cold War with an interplanetary Cold War. We do not need to go into the next millennium exporting to the universe warfare and violence. I would say that it is time, and high time, for the people to have the peace they deserve, and that this peace should be global and interglobal, planetary and interplanetary, and that it can be established within our lifetimes. The continuation on life on earth probably exists in our doing this. As the Chinese proverb says, unless we change directions, we are likely to end up where we are going. And it's a very whimsical little, I love the Zen and the Chinese saying, because they're so perfect, because it is exactly true. We have to look and see where we are going. We have a non-sustainable civilization that is increasingly violent and that is increasingly destroying the ecosystem of our planet. This cannot continue for another generation. We, those of us who are adults in 1997, living on this planet, have the responsibility and the obligation to our children's children's children to establish a sustainable, high-tech, peaceful civilization which will forever forswear the use of weapons of mass destruction or the use of violence means for resolution of conflict with our own people, but also with our interplanetary neighbors. We must resolve to do this. And I think that it is essential to our existence that we do. I invite all of you to become ambassadors for the Coalition for Universal Peace, and that we work tirelessly day and night. This is my last breath. I don't care if I live 40 more years or 4 more months. My own view is that we will create a future on this planet which will be interplanetary, which will use these wonderful technologies for peaceful means, that will allow the Earth to blossom and yet still have a high standard of living, and that we will evolve into a cosmic, peaceful civilization. Thank you, and God bless.